Good morning, members. We are obviously here today for the Ed Finance Division.
Do we have a quorum?
Okay, we do not have a quorum as of yet. So we are going to go ahead and start with just some presentations. Up first, we have a presentation from MDE on full-service community school grants. So it looks like Greg Keith. Good morning. Welcome to our committee. If you would introduce yourself and begin with your information.
Good morning. I'm Greg Keith. I'm from the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm the director of the School Support Division at the Minnesota Department of Education. And my presentation today, my understanding was for 15 minutes to just talk a little bit about what full-service community schools are, number one. Number two, to speak a little bit to whether or not full-service community schools as a model meets the evidence-based requirements under ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act, and then finally some information on the previous grants that we did around full-service community schools and who were the grantees. Full-service community schools have actually been around for about a century. What's really new is using full-service community schools as a model for school improvement. So this is not a new concept. It's a nationwide movement or model, but it is firmly here in Minnesota as well. Full-service community schools in Minnesota, according to what we know, really started primarily in Brooklyn Center and Duluth. Those were kind of the pioneers in this work here in Minnesota. I'm going to speak just a little bit about what full-service community schools are and the rationale behind the model. We all know that student success is impacted both by factors inside the school and outside the school. Schools need to address inequities in areas such as health care, stable housing, and affordable and healthy food. Those are foundational to students' ability to learn. Community schools are a vital component in an equity strategy statewide. They create conditions necessary for students to thrive by focusing attention, time, and resources on a vision for student and school success. They also help make society fairer by investing in communities that have been marginalized by historical disinvestment. Community schools vary, but successful community schools generally have four pillars or four elements present. First of all, integrated student supports. So these might look like things like a healthcare facility actually in the school, vision screening, housing supports for students, social work support, counseling support. And generally, it's aimed at students, but it also can often be for the entire family of students or for the community at large that the school serves. So the first pillar is integrated student supports, using the school basically as a hub for wraparound services for families and students. The second pillar is expanded learning time and opportunities. So this often looks like before school programming and after school programming. It generally not only focuses on academic, but also high interest areas of students and even families. It can also often look like parent programming as well as student programming. Thirdly, family and community engagement is an important pillar in full service community schools. And this can look like family engagement in terms of what's the role of the family in student success, parenting classes, and then just the more general, what we think of as community engagement in terms of knowing where students are at, knowing what the school is doing. And then fourthly, collaborative leadership and practices. And when we say collaborative, we generally think of families being involved, but in a successful full-service community school, often service providers and nonprofits are involved in school leadership and school planning. So It's important in a full-service community school to start with a strong plan. So generally, a successful full-service community school, because of the uniqueness of each individual school community, they generally start by conducting a pretty intensive needs assessment in terms of what are the needs of the students, what are the needs of the community, and also looking at what are the assets that are available in the community so that those can be leveraged within the program. The needs assessment allows the school to tailor the combination of program and services to the actual needs, strengths, and priorities of the students, of the school, and of the community. So that collaborative approach, if it's done correctly, remember that collaborative leadership and family engagement, build support and build sustainability for the community schools, and it creates local opportunities for learning. One finding that was very interesting to me as I have been learning more and more about full service community schools is that they're actually very efficient and cost effective. The Partnership for the Future of Learning found that for every dollar invested in community schools strategies, the result was up to a $15 return to the community. So I found that really interesting in the conversation about full-service community schools. Full-service community schools tend to be a hub for the community and generally invest in the community way beyond the traditional role of a school. So I'm going to pause here because hopefully that provided you an overview of what a full-service community school is before I move forward with the evidence base of communities, full-service community schools. They're often just called community schools, too. So if I kind of use that, those are interchangeable terms.
Mr. Keith, would you entertain questions on that overview portion to begin?
I would be happy to.
Okay. Any questions from members? Okay, not seeing any. Go ahead. Why don't you continue?
I will just add a kudo for Minnesota here that just popped into my mind. The Council for Chief State School Officers has put out sample legislation that states can use. Just want to give kudos to our state that we were, our legislation was one of the states that was used to develop that. It was model legislation for the country. So just a little kudo for us there, something to be proud of. So many of you have heard me testify in regards to the Every Student Succeeds Act, the federal legislation that requires us to identify and support low-performing schools. So I'm not going to go deep into ESSA, except for to remind everyone that under the federal law, schools identified for support and improvement must implement at least one what they call evidence-based practice. And ESSA pretty explicitly lays out four tiers of evidence-based practices and what are the guidelines around practices that fall into the different tiers. What are the requirements? For school improvement purposes, schools must implement at least one practice that's from one of the top three tiers, with tier one being sort of the highest level of requirements and tier four being the lowest. So for school improvement, they're not allowed to implement tier four. Well, they can implement tier four, but they have to implement at least one practice that meets the evidence base for the top three tiers. Full service community schools do meet the evidence-based requirements in the federal law for tier one. Tier 1 requires that there is a randomized controlled trial that showed benefit to students. In fact, full-service community schools at Tier 1 impacted attendance and math. It also meets the requirements at Tier 2. Tier 2 requires a quasi-experimental study. And if you have questions about that, I'm definitely going to have to call staff up to answer questions. for impacting reading achievement and the overall GPA of students. So there is no question. There have been numerous studies that demonstrate that full-service community schools meet the evidence-based requirement in ESSA for school improvement. We were able to find studies that showed that full-service community schools impact attendance, family engagement, discipline referrals, the social functioning of students, academic achievement of students in both reading and math, and overall GPA. And then students in full-service community schools report more positive school climates. So there's a strong evidence base behind full-service community schools. I'm going to speak just for a minute on the grant program that went on for 2 years in support of full-service community schools. The first grants went out from the department in fiscal year 2016. In year one, there were four grants to four schools in four districts, and the total amount granted was about $500,000. In year two, there were nine grants totaling $1 million. The grantees included Rochester, who received three grants, Duluth, who received three grants, Brooklyn Center, who received three grants, Minneapolis Public Schools received one grant, Faribault received one grant, Deer River received one grant, and St. Paul received one grant. The current grantees have completely completed their grant cycle, so there's no longer a grant program and there's no longer active grants. But we do still receive frequent inquiries from schools and from community partners regarding full-service community schools and the implementation of full-service community schools. We do not collect data on statewide beyond the grantees regarding who is implementing full-service community schools or the fidelity of implementation of full-service community schools. So I can't really speak to additional programs beyond the grant program that we facilitated. However, I will add that we are aware, just through providing technical assistance, of other full-service community schools around the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Pryor first, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I may, I have a question. When you're talking about how it's been demonstrated there have been improvements in math and reading and overall GPA, can you also speak to these improvements, if they, how they play out, you know, in terms of special at-risk categories that we're looking at? So English language learners, the children that live, that are homeless, poverty, some of the opportunity gaps that we have in the schools.
Mr. Keith.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to look to program staff to see if we have that information or if we would need to follow up with that information. I'm going to call program staff up to address that question, if that's okay.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Good morning. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Dennis Duffy, School Improvement Program Manager at MDE.
Jackie Blogsvet, School Improvement Program Specialist at MDE.
And I can speak briefly just off the top of my head, and Madam Chair and Representative, I can speak a little bit off the top of my head, and if you want a more thorough answer, I'd be happy to follow up as well. I know some of the evaluations that looked at full-service community schools did look at at-risk populations, such as homeless, special education, things like that. And a lot of the evaluations kind of depended on what services were being provided at the schools. I know it was looked at, and specifically with things like academic achievement and attendance, the results were generally positive. I can also speak specifically to an example in Redwood City, California, that looked at, among other things, progress towards English language proficiency, which, if representatives will recall, that is one of the measures used in the North Star accountability system, that also showed a positive effect. So in terms of at-risk categories or categories of interest, when we talk about opportunity gaps, these have been addressed, and I think you'd find satisfactory evidence in the evaluations.
Follow-up?
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is on a similar line, but maybe a little different twist. I'm wondering if we have any longitudinal data in this state, not just for, you know, English language learners or special ed, but in general, comparing our full-service schools that have maybe been here for a while to regular schools, and, you know, as the academic achievement and graduation rate significantly better, do we have any data like that available?
Madam Chair, Representative, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. We think we have to look. But.
Madam Chair, Representative, we could look at that. For today, I can reference several of the schools that were identified as priority schools, thinking specifically of Green Elementary in Minneapolis, received a full-service community schools grant, absolutely implemented a rigorous model, and they actually were not re-identified for support and improvement. So I can point to at least one school, and if interested, we could probably pull some data together regarding the grantees and longitudinal student achievement, if you would like that.
Madam Chair, follow up? Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that would be wonderful. I just think it's very important as we implement strategies like these to improve graduation rates, student achievement, and so on, that we make sure that they're effective and working. And, you know, if they are, we should continue them. And if not, we should look for different avenues. But if you could get that, that would be wonderful.
I'll also clarify regarding Green. They're no longer identified at the priority or comprehensive level. They're still technically identified, but they've seen significant improvement.
Okay. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Keith, and thank you for your work, as usual. But has the department released its latest review of our full-service community schools? Because I don't think I've received one. I've read the school improvement piece, but the full review that in law you're supposed to submit, has that been released?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative, I work with the full-service community schools and administer them. I have received their three-year reports from the schools that had the first round of grants, so there were just four of them that had that three-year report due, and we have reviewed it and compiled an evaluation as best as we can with the data that we've received. The challenge is that full-service community schools are so unique to each community and that they're each tracking their own sets of data. We don't have specific statewide data that we require from each community school regarding the students that received the services and didn't receive them, and the impact that those services had on each student. Does that answer your question?
Madam Chair, follow up?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you for that, but I'm looking at subdivision 3 of our statutes that refer to full-service community schools, and there are 16 items that are supposed to be submitted for the review, the every 3 years that they submit to the commissioner. So I'm just wondering to what extent you have fulfilled those obligations that are in statute.
Ms. Blood-Fett.
Madam Chair, Representative, I've received the three-year reports and answers to all the questions around those 16 items and compiled them and forwarded the review to MDE staff.
We can definitely follow up on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Konish-Pudin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for sharing the information about these schools. I think one of the main components of these community schools is to have on-site resources available to the students and to the family to help address some of the needs around physical care, you know, dental care, mental health, those sort of things, and alleviate some of the issues around parents having to take time off and transportation issues, as well as creating that community hub that you mentioned. And so I'm wondering if you could speak to any of the community schools that might have those wraparound services, you know, maybe specifically around mental health or you know, behavior issues, and how that might have affected, you know, have you seen an improvement? Do you see that it's a, a long-term improvement. If there's anything you can share about that.
Mr. Keith, or? Okay. Am I saying this correct? Blogsvet?
Blogsvet.
Blogsvet.
Thank you. I would say that I can highlight a few of the districts and schools. Brooklyn Center has a lot of on-site supports. They have a healthcare clinic at their secondary school site, and they had three grants. They had one at the their academy, their alternative learning center, and one at Earl Brown Elementary. And part of like the whole bringing together and aligning all of those supports is that they found ways to transport the students to that clinic, even if they weren't on site at the secondary school. They have an eye doctor in their community who volunteers his services, I think once a week or maybe once a month. I can't remember that detail, but he volunteers his services, and he checked the students' vision and gave them prescriptions, and then found that students weren't able to fill the prescriptions and get their eyeglasses, and so found a way through his networks to fulfill those prescriptions as well and bring them to the school and give them to the students. There are, I think in St. Paul, they had they experimented with sensory rooms, and for students who have emotional behavior disorders or sensory needs, they put in place some sensory rooms. And then part of the family engagement pillar was that they invited the families into the room and provided them training on the special techniques that they can use and the tools that they can have. And that they might even just have at home and around them that they can use to help regulate behavior. There's examples of like that in every single full-service community school.
Follow up.
Yes, please. I find that very valuable. I teach in a school that has, some high-need families, and oftentimes if a student is missing and needs to go to an appointment, for the eye doctor, the dentist, they lose a whole day. And I can surely see the value of having that kind of on-site service as well as community. So just to follow up, you were talking about how you're able to also work with families to address some of the issues that their students are having and giving them some of the tools and some of the skills to work with them at home and on site. So have you seen an improvement in maybe some of the behavior issues or the retention of keeping kids in the classroom and less absenteeism?
Ms. Blogsvet.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Representative. I can't speak to any data that was reported to me about keeping kids in the classroom. I do recall some reports of less referrals, and especially there are so many different examples of these services. There was a partnership with an organization that provided support on the playgrounds, and then that lowered some referrals for the kiddos as they are at recess. I do know that the examples that Mr. Keith shared today about an increase in engagement, increase in attendance, that those all come with full-service community schools, and that those come first before you start to see the academic improvements, and that's been reported widely in the reviews and evaluations.
Follow up.
Just one last thing. Well, I would like to thank you for sharing this information. That number, $1 investment, gives you a $15 return on that investment. And I know there are folks out there that perhaps feel that we're trying to micromanage the students, away from the family and taking some more of those responsibilities on. But it sounds like within these community models, you're actually bringing the parents and the family and the community in. Mm-hmm. And, that's a beautiful thing when we can get everybody to work together for the best of our students. So thank you very much.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Blogsvet, I'm picking up a bit off of Representative Kudish-Padin's questions and your answers. Between the two of you, you've identified full-service community schools, at least in some settings, providing eye care, mm-hmm. dental care, general physical health care, and mental health care. Are there reporting challenges? Because all four of those provisions of care would fall under HIPAA regulations. Are there challenges to MDE and the legislature receiving reports on students' access of those services because of HIPAA regulations?
Who would like that question? Sure. Ms. Blogsvet.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Representative. Yes, there are challenges, and those challenges can be overcome with MOUs and agreements, but that's not a bridge that we've crossed yet.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to say that anybody who refers to the children as kiddos guarantees my yes vote. Thank you very much. But there are a lot of teachers and former teachers sitting around these tables, and I have to say that when I first learned about community schools 4 or 5 years ago, I was enthusiastic about the approach and the idealism as well as the implementation of the programs. And all of us former teachers, I think, would recognize that attention to these four pillars would really be supportive to our classrooms and the programs that we participated in. But how are we able to support or emphasize those areas? Is it the financial grant to those 9 schools, or I guess 12 schools, that makes that possible? Or is it some sort of formula or rearrangement of resources in schools that give attention to those four pillars?
Mr. Keith.
Madam Chair, Representative, when I think about the grants, I think what they primarily supported was planning. I mentioned that needs assessment. Most of the grantees were looking to implement were new to the model, and so they primarily used the resources to support a thorough needs assessment. Most invested in a position that actually facilitated gathering data on community assets and community needs. And in the course of that year, generally it would take about a year to conduct that process. The other thing that the resources supported in the schools was they would leverage that that position to build partnership with community organizations, nonprofits, higher ed, in order to actually provide some of these services to schools. So most of the money we saw going to planning types of activities, a position, gathering of data, creating partnerships, and perhaps extended time for teachers to participate in the planning, and for materials to involve community in the planning process.
Follow up.
Madam Chair, thank you. But it seems to me that these services have to have some cost involved. And I've taught at schools that served economically depressed neighborhoods and communities, and I've also worked with children from affluent neighborhoods. And in both situations, these services would be really supportive. But they cost money, and how do our schools pay for those services and then kind of seamlessly integrate them into the time and attention that children are with us?
Mr. Keith.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm going to answer, and then I'm going to invite program staff if they have additional reflections on your question. Generally, they are seeking to leverage resources that are already available in the community. Mm-hmm. So Jackie mentioned someone voluntarily providing time. Mm-hmm. One of the conversations, so I'll give a couple of examples, but you know, you can generalize. One of the things that we've been talking about in regards to new grantees would be how we could link the full service community schools with other programs from other agencies. For example, the Homework Starts with Home, and probably many of you are familiar with that. But how could we link the resources that flow through that program into full-service community schools. So many times it is not new money. They might be leveraging Title IV money to provide extended time for opportunities for students. So many times it's about either leveraging existing community resources or money from other avenues or volunteers.
Well, thank you. I look forward to it. Madam Chair, I look forward to continue working and hearing about your work and supporting it. Thanks for your work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank you for your indulgence. I know that we have a lot to hear this morning, and if I may ask one more question, I appreciate it.
Go ahead.
You. This is not one of the measurements that I think was written into it that we would be looking at, but I wonder if you do know anything in terms of, you know, is it stabilizing the community and the attendance in the school where families are choosing the full-service school and not deciding to, you know, even open enrolling or and that kind of bit. And it's not one that we asked you before up front, and so I don't want to change the goalpost in midstream. Or no, that's mixing metaphors, sorry. But thank you.
Mr. Keith. Or Ms. Blogspit.
Madam Chairman, Representative, thank you for your question. I have seen evidence that it is helping to improve attendance and enrollment and keeping that community attending the schools and interested and feeling welcome and valued in those schools. And I think that the site coordinator that all the schools are required to hire as this grant through this grant is they call it like the relational glue in full service community schools, and they are the ones they're that relational glue with the partners, with the teachers, with the leaders in the district and in the school. And they help the teachers understand what they're hearing from the parents and help the parents understand what they're hearing from the teachers. And they're just a real they take on the weight of keeping all of those four pillars aligned so that the teachers can focus on the high quality instruction in the classes. And so all of that that helps the families feel more engaged and involved and does keep them enrolled in the school.
So, Representative Pryor.
Madam Chair, thank you. So we can say, you know, in terms of school choice for parents, this is a model that they seem to be receptive to and are embracing.
Ms. Blogspit.
Yes, I can say that. And I can say that at Green Elementary, they had they've reached their goal was 95% consistent attendance if at the last two quarters, and they've reached that goal, and they've seen an increase in enrollment in their kindergarten class. So, yes.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick question for Mr. Keith. Has the department ever discussed whether this grant should come out of HHS rather than education?
Mr. Keith.
Madam Chair, Representative, we have not discussed that.
Okay.
Representative Erickson. I think it's a good idea.
I will add that we have been engaging in some very thorough instructions with DHS about how we could link the Full Service Community Schools grant with services that they are offering. And we're beginning to branch out to additional agencies as well. So there could be a state-level coordination and support for Full Service Community Schools versus them doing that as individual communities.
Thank you. Members, we do have a quorum with that. I would be Representative Damuth, would you like to move the minutes from February 7th?
I will move the minutes, Chair.
Okay. The minutes are moved by Representative Damuth.
No.
Okay. Up next, we have a continuation of the history of full-service community schools. Kathy Bogan and Bernie Burnham are joining us. If you would like to introduce yourself for the record and begin with testimony, that would be wonderful.
Good morning, Madam Chair Sanstead and members of the committee. My name is Bernie Burnham. I'm an elementary teacher currently on full-time release from Duluth Public Schools, serving as the president of the Duluth Federation of Teachers, and I also chair our Duluth Community Schools Collaborative Board. You've had a number of questions this morning thus far about community schools. I think you'll hear answers that you're looking for as our schools tell their stories this morning. So thank you for having us here and also for supporting education in our great state of Minnesota. We are here to encourage you to support HF 1013 for full-service community school funding. We currently have three full-service community schools in Duluth: Myers Wilkins Elementary, Lincoln Park Middle School, Denfeld High School. This means students and families that start at Myers Wilkins, where there is an 82% free and reduced lunch rate, have the opportunity to continue from elementary to high school with our Duluth Community Schools. My first connection with community schools was as a teacher at Grant Elementary, which is now Myers Wilkins. As a fourth grade teacher, I quickly understood the benefits of this model. Our students were with me during the school day and transitioned to after-school programming for academic help and enrichment clubs. We partnered with our collaborative colleagues to ensure success and connections to school for our students. I chose to teach in the extended school day program while at Grant. This enabled me to build solid relationships with students and their families. At this point, I'm going to introduce you to my friend and colleague, Kathy Bogan, who will give you the history of our Duluth Community Schools.
Ms. Bogan.
Thanks. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Bogan, and I'm one of the founding members of the Duluth Community School Collaborative dating back to 1997. I'm currently serving as the interim administrator, and I thank you for this opportunity to share our story about the Duluth Full Service Community Schools and how they are making a difference in the lives of our children, families, and our community. Like many communities, Duluth is a city whose children's experience life very differently depending on their family's economic circumstances. Unique to Duluth is its geography. We run about 37 miles east to west and beyond along the shore of Lake Superior. Historically, wealthier families have settled in the east side of Duluth, and the poor and working class families more to the central and western neighborhoods. This really has an impact on what we see play out in the schools. Neighborhood-wise, it results in stark disparities in health, education, and employment indicators. Recognizing the opportunity gap that children experience during their development has a profound effect on their academic achievement, the Duluth Community School Collaborative, which is a grassroots organization of parents, community members, and educators, began in 1997 an effort to engage organizations, individuals, and businesses in providing support, services, and programming that parents believed would help their children thrive. Understanding that what happens outside of the school day impacts children's learning during the school day. High-quality after-school enrichment, tutoring, and mentoring were among the first programs initiated. This successful strategy resulted in improvements in school attendance, behavior, and academic performance. As these programs flourished, Myers-Wilkins became the community's home base for learning, health and wellness opportunities, cultural celebration, and a sense of belonging. Along with programming for children, family education, and cultural events have become integral to the school culture. Families from Myers-Wilkins felt strongly that it was important to continue the full-service community model when their children continued their education in middle school. With the passage of the full-service community school bill by the 2015 Minnesota State Legislature, funds became available to expand the community school initiative to the middle school, where the vast majority of Myers-Wilkins students attend 6th to 8th grade. This bill provided the needed financial support to hire a site coordinator. The site coordinator role is absolutely integral to the success of a full-service community school, as they are the person who serves as the primary connector between the school and the community service providers, organizations, and volunteers. Site team members at Lincoln Park Middle School reached out to the community to prioritize programming and services most needed there and were involved in hiring the coordinator at Lincoln Park. Partnerships with area colleges to provide school year and summer enrichment in the arts and sciences, a teacher home visiting program, and a variety of health and wellness initiatives, many of them involved with St. Louis County Public Health, have been implemented. Working with the city, we were also able to get public transportation in the form of busing so our parents without vehicles could come to school. Later that same year, Denfeld High School applied for the planning grant to become our third full-service community school. completing the continuum from kindergarten through 12th grade. Engaging the surrounding community and families, conversations began to determine what students and families felt was most necessary at this level. I would like to cite some of those because I think they'd be of real interest to the community when we ask the students and their families, what is going to help you succeed? What is going to help you graduate? What is going to help you be prepared for life beyond high school? Here's what we heard. Food. A lot of students in our Denfeld community needed that extra meal, that extra nutrition, in order because they would have jobs after school or they wanted to participate in after-school opportunities, and they needed a meal. The other one, biggest thing students came up with, keep our media center open so we can use the library and the computers, and we need tutors. And that is from the students themselves ahead of anything else. And lastly, access to the fitness facilities of the school so that they could, as a part of their health and wellness initiative. And that's exactly what we did. The next year, we hired a site coordinator, again, the most critical position for the success of a community school, and programming began. The Denfeld After School Happenings Program, or DASH, provided nutritious after school meals, and this is a partnership with our child nutrition services. We found that the there's money available to provide nutrition support for young people who live in what we call food desert or having a hard time accessing food. So we do not pay for that. It comes in as a support that's already available if you have the wherewithal to use it. Individualized tutoring, and that is provided by teachers, college students, and we have a very robust volunteer effort that goes on with people throughout our community. Enrichment groups and access to school fitness facilities during its first 57 days of operation last year. The full service community model, with a focus on understanding the specific needs of a school community, leveraging community support to meet those needs, and having in place a full-time site coordinator to facilitate partnerships and services, is a cost-effective strategy that is a win-win for all. Thank you.
At present, do you want to pause?
Well, we do have a few questions. If you're open to those right now, this might be a good time.
Sure.
Representative Katisa Batun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm hopeful as I continue to learn about the full service community school model. You've mentioned now that there's three schools in the area. If a child attends another neighborhood school that isn't a full service community school, are they able to participate? Are their family able to participate in some of the activities or services that are available? So I'm imagining we live the way that our neighborhood is divided in Eden Prairie. We live very close to one school, but it's actually not our neighborhood school. So if our student or if our children were able to attend, you know, an evening event, or if there was eye doctor services or something like that, are children able to plug into some of those opportunities, or is it only for students who attend that school?
That's a really good question, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for your question. That's really a good clarifying point. Full-service community schools are seen as a neighborhood hub for the neighborhood, and they are intentionally located in neighborhoods that where families may have difficulty accessing services. And, yes, they are open to any child in that neighborhood and also their families. And that is one of the great features of the full-service community school. Especially where you've got situations where we've got students leaving that area for schooling elsewhere.
Members, in the sake of time, we're going to continue with our testimony and try to save questions now till the end. We do have another bill up in front of us. Please continue.
So at present, we are in partnership with our school district. Our assistant superintendent serves on our full-service community school board. We continue to move forward together and plan for the future of our community. It is our dream to invite other schools in ISD 709 to join the collaborative. With your support, this can become a reality. We really wanted to bring one of our parents with us, but with short notice, you know, it's sometimes hard to get away. So last night we got received an email from Ed Lewis, who is a parent and also a teacher at Denfeld High School. So here's Ed's story. One of the reasons our family decided to pull our daughter from her neighborhood school and transport her to Myers-Wilkins was the fact that it was a full-service community school. Our daughter has special needs, and with the programs that the full-service community school offers, she was able to get extra help with her schoolwork and was able to experience things like cooking, basketball, Girl Scouts, and art and science. Those experiences were taught by wonderful staff who were role models for our daughter and always made her feel welcome and cared for. Now that she is finishing elementary school, we are very pleased that her middle school and then her high school are also full-service community schools. It will help all of us feel connected to the school and the community, even though we don't live in that neighborhood. I can't say enough good things about full-service community schools. The ability to utilize these buildings and maximize the community resources to bring in families and community members under one roof is desperately needed in our community. The full-service community school is able to offer extra academic help, free transportation when after-school activities are done, a super snack while they stay after school, and family events that bring in groups that don't normally come to the school. It has helped our schools increase family engagement and, in turn, raise student engagement and student success. I hope the powers that be will see the impact of full-service community schools to fund them appropriately. So, once again, our hope is that you support House File 1013. Last week, I sat with a few of my Minnesota colleagues as we worked on an EPIC, an Educator Policy Innovation Center report that will be presented to you soon from Education Minnesota. We discussed how community schools are a strategy for the success of our students, their families, our communities, and education in Minnesota. If they were here with me now, you would hear them ask you to ensure this just becomes a part of how we fund education. Investing in our public schools is an investment in our future. The last thing I like to say is this. Some people believe we should only be concerned with education in our schools. I'm here to tell you that this strategy helps lay the foundation for success. As you heard from Kathy, we offer opportunities that many of our families would not be able to provide otherwise. I believe it is our responsibility to do what is best for our students. Working together, we will accomplish this. Thank you, Representative Murphy, for this bill, and thank you all for your time. We appreciate your support. Please take the time to look at the video from our Duluth Community Schools Collaborative 20th anniversary, which we just celebrated last year, which I believe has been or will be shared with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that testimony. Members, due to our time constraints, we are going to email you the video, so we're not going to take time out of the committee today to watch that video. So I apologize for that. Thank you for that, and we will get that out to our members. Congratulations on the great work that you've been doing. Up next, we have Chair Murphy, or I should say Representative Murphy, to present House File 1013. Members, today, this file 1013 is up for consideration. It was referred to Education Finance Division by Ways and Means, and it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Ed Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I move that motion, or that statement that we would like it. Bill to be held over for possible inclusion.
Representative Murphy moves House File 1013 for possible inclusion in the Ed Finance Omnibus Bill. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members, you've heard from people that far more knowledgeable than I about the whole concept of community schools and the need for families to be part of the education. And I think, well, I was thinking of what can I say, and whatever it is, it's already been said. But this is me as a child, as going through the school systems, that just I thought was, my life was complete. You know, I got to school, small school. Now, with the school I went to, big school, but when it was a first through 12th grade school, everybody knew everybody. There were licensed teachers, and the only other people besides the licensed teachers in that building were the janitors, the school bus drivers, the part-time lunch ladies, and that was it. And the only things outside of reading, writing, arithmetic, science, the only thing but the basic course curriculum was athletics for boys. And I've told you before about the library. The librarian was there, licensed teacher. But the kids didn't have full access to the library. That was an addition. And two books a week you could take out. So all the books got read a lot. Because you read one every day, the same one, over and over. But there was one more person that came in 2 or 3 days to the school and went out to the community if a kid was absent. And that was Nina Salto. And Nina Salto was a registered nurse. Navy blue blazer, navy blue skirt, hose, navy blue shoes, satchel with all kinds of stuff in it, carried along like a doctor's satchel. And she came to the house for measles, mumps, impetigo. Or if maybe more than one kid was absent each day, maybe family counseling, kind of. What's going on in this household? She came to our house when I had impetigo, big purple medicine on the impetigo that she painted, and I had to stay home for days. She came to the neighbor's house for smallpox. She could drive a car. When I started teaching, my first teaching job was in a little community like that, up the shore a little bit. But there weren't any additional people besides the teachers. And at Clover Valley, up the shore, they didn't even have a school nurse. But the system that was all of St. Louis County, it was a St. Louis County school, the system had a nurse. But how often did the nurse come down from the range, from Ely to Clover Valley, to Meadowlands, to Floodwood? I mean, it didn't happen very often. And then, after 3 years, I got a job for 33 years at Duluth Central High School. My gosh, the teacher wasn't expected to do everything. The teacher was expected to teach what they were trained, historically trained in history for me, social studies, geography a little bit. But you didn't have more than one or two preps a day. And you could really do that teaching. And then came excitement because there was money from the federal government for experimentation. There was federal money for special needs. There was federal money for positions in the schools. There was federal money, as promised, for the special needs kids. And then by the mid-80s, that money just dried up and there was no more excitement. And then we started with the concepts across America, as has already been stated, with community schools. And for 20 years, Duluth has experienced community schools. Parents working with teachers and bus drivers and nurses and the county and the city working together, And those buildings do not close down at 4 o'clock in the afternoon where there's community schools. There can be things going on all the time, and it's not just taking kids and waking up kids so they can get to school to practice hockey. It's for all kinds of things. It's for robotics, and it's for family entertainment, and it's for problem solving. And the people are invited in, and kids are attending school. And it's not perfect, but people are working together to solve the problems, and that's what community schools are all about. And that's why this is absolutely necessary, and we've got to go forth. And there are people here now that can tell you lots of better stories, because it's for now. It's not for the past. It's for the future, and it's now. And these people have real experience with community schools. And so let's give them the microphone for the rest of the time, and I'm sorry.
Representative Murphy, you're fine. Members, we have the bill before us. There were no amendments. We have Representative Murphy's testimony. We will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you. Up next, we have Tashana Williams, the community school site coordinator from Brooklyn Center. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Tashana Williams, and good morning, Chair, Madam Chair, and community members.
Good morning, my name is Deanna Roan, Chair Stanstead, and committee members. I am currently the Full Service Community School Coordinator in Deer River. This is the second year of full service community school strategy being implemented in the Deer River schools. As a teacher, I saw the needs of the students and heard about a school in Duluth. That was the beginning of the journey towards the full service community school model in Deer River. Since beginning my job in September, my goals have been to decrease chronic absences, build new partnerships, and maintain existing partnerships. Deer River schools have a strong commitment to our families and schools. Many of the supports that we have in place right now have been in place for several years. Our elementary building serves birth through fifth grade. We have 8 pre-K classrooms and a senior citizen center attached to our elementary. Our district made a decision to include a full service community building when we began the full service community school model. My district covers 500 square miles. 70% of our students qualify for free and reduced lunch. We border the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. We received an implementation grant from the Minnesota Department of Education in 2017. We used that grant to do a needs assessment and hire a coordinator. For school year 18-19, the district is using money from the general fund to support the coordinator position. We also received a grant from the Northland Foundation. The coordinator creates, strengthens, and maintains a bridge between the school and the community. Community school coordinators facilitate and provide leadership for the collaborative process and the development of a continuum of services for children, families, and community members. We have been able to bring a healthcare navigator to our school to assist families in signing up for health insurance. We are working with Children's Dental Services to bring dental services to our school. We have 4 mental health practitioners in our elementary school serving a fourth of our students. We are looking to put supports in place that will help all our students be successful academically. One of my partners in the full service community school journey is Kayleen. She wrote this, and I'm going to share it with you. I am the after school coordinator that programs and oversees community education and the Boys and Girls Club in Deer River. The impact of the full service community school on the district has been an invaluable partnership during our after school programming. Earlier this year, we had 100 youth signed in after school at our Boys and Girls Club. 45 youth taking part in drum and dance, 20 youth participating in 4-H, 15 adults were participating in a fitness class, 30 girls were in Girl Scouts, 15 senior citizens were taking part in a defensive driving class, There was an insurance navigator on site and community cafe, all taking place at the same time under one roof. There was a sense of calm in the school because of the many activities taking part all through the building. This is what a full-service community school looks like and feels like in Deer River. Thank you to Representative Murphy for bringing this bill forward, and thank you, Chair Sandsted, and the committee for listening.
Thank you very much for that. Okay. Proceed.
And again, good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tashana Williams, and I'm the Full Service Community School Site Coordinator for Brooklyn Center Community School District 286. We are the only full service community school district in the state of Minnesota, a district made of four schools, a little over 2,000 students, 85% free or reduced lunch, and over 100 partnerships and programs. I'm honored to be here, and thank you for allowing me to share my experience as a full service community school site coordinator with you. I'm coming to you today to share the importance of community schools and an impact as the hub of the community and for all stakeholders. As a full service community school site coordinator, my role has many hats on a day-to-day base. My role is essential in creating the bridge between students, families, resources, and partnerships. We coordinate partnerships and services. For example, in my district, we have an on-site clinic for families and community members, as well as a clinic for staff and their dependents. This helps reduce the time taken away from learning and working, opportunities for students, for opportunities for families to get free or low-cost services, open to community members 0 to 19 years of age, offer mental and sexual health services, children's dental and vision services, and reduce the cost of insurance and co-pay for employees. I'm also responsible for organizing family engagement activities and events, developing new partnerships and retaining others, connecting parents and guardians to admin and board members to uphold our mission, which is to equip every student with the knowledge and life skills and global perspectives to contribute to society and respond to the needs of an ever-changing world. Full Service Community Schools does this and more. We are more than a wraparound service. We are, as the motto states at the National Coalition for Community Schools, the hub of its neighborhood, uniting families and educators, community members to provide all students with top quality academics, enrichment, health, social services, and opportunity to succeed in life. And not only is this a service for Minnesota, but this is a service that is taken on across the country as community schools continue to increase. Some of our programs at Brooklyn Center include our 21st Century Before and After School Services, which just introduced a dinner program last year. So we offer three meals and snacks to our students each day, except Fridays. And also on Fridays, we have weekend packs go home that is provided by our community school site coordinator if those students reach out or even if a staff member reach out to us. We also have our community corner, which offers services in groups such as Empower Her, which is a parent and community volunteer-led group, our Metro North Adult Learning, which provides our adults with GED programming as well as some of our traditional EL classes, and then also our Hennepin County Family Advocate, which is a partnership, and then additional pre-K classes, which is offered also at our community corner. We have our health coordinator, our wellness coordinator, and our farm-to-school coordinator, who also helps provide resources and also help us connect with families throughout the community. Just one family story that stands out to me is just recently we had a student that approached me with frustration, just carrying a heavy burden, being the oldest child and feeling like she was responsible for the livelihood of her family. I was able to advocate for the family to receive legal services to avoid eviction, which allowed them to stay in their home a little longer for us to do a step-by-step analogy of what they actually needed. In this situation, I played a pivotal role in giving support to the student to continue to strive academically and socially. And this student is one of three students that is on our school board at this time, which is the first time ever. I was also able to help the parent and support them through their hardship, as well as continuing to allow them to check in with us even after housing was found for them. Today I'm here just to show my support for the bill, and as we all continue the great work within our communities, I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for your time, as well as Representative Murphy for presenting the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Members, if you have brief questions, we could take a few of them right now. Oh, Representative Pryor.
Thank you. I just want to pick up on what you were just saying about how an older child has to take responsibility for the younger children in their family or for the rest of the family, because that's what I've heard from people that have been coming to my office about. And that, so it seems like you are uniquely situated to help that situation, it's the whole family that you're talking about.
Ms. Williams.
Yes, and thank you for your question. Yes, it's definitely, I take pride in really taking care of the whole entire family, especially when it's an older student that is thriving really well in our school, whether it's through sports that she's on, president of student council. This student has all these things going for her, and to be hit with, you got to be evicted in 30 days, especially in December, right before Christmas. It was definitely a hardship for me, so it definitely took some weekend work for me. Going to the parent home that they were currently in, just connecting with them even after school time, evening times, checking in, making sure that mom did go down and get that legal services that she need, and they were able to follow up with me that Monday and said that everything was okay.
Fantastic. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for all the good hard work that you do. And just to sort of follow up on what you just said, you mentioned that you were able to advocate and get some help for families in need. Do you find that there are community agencies or programs or professionals in the community that recognize the value of the school or your school district, and have offered or are willing to do some of the pro bono or do some of the suggestive things that would help a family? So I guess I'm asking, do you feel like the community is starting to be a voluntary participant in this whole community school idea?
Ms. Williams or Ms. Rohn?
I'm from Deer River, so it's a very small town. We have 1,000 people, and it's been the grassroots of people coming forward and helping. And just a quick, we had a family who was homeless, and I helped place them, and their whole trailer is currently, everything they need was provided by the teachers in my building that we put out a need, this family needs, and we got everything they needed to set up housekeeping in a house. It was amazing.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and this is a question that maybe Mr. Strom could answer, or maybe Representative Murphy could answer. But the state already—I just want to get a grasp around this because I wasn't on the committee back in 2015 when this program came into being. The state currently provides $500 million per year for compensatory revenue. My question would be, does this pay for any services that cannot be funded under that revenue?
Maybe Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, there's a list in the statute of uses of compensatory revenue, and I suspect most of the uses for the staff work that that's done at the schools with community full service community schools could be used for that. I'll print that list for you, but there are a whole range of uses that compensatory revenue can be used for. The full service community schools were funded through a special line item for fiscal years 16 and 17, and then additional money was added in fiscal year 17. So there were the appropriation that year was $250,000 per year for 16 and 17, and then in fiscal 17 an additional $1 million was added to that appropriation.
So I guess
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, so is there some overlap in the funding? That would be a question that I would have.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, I suspect that the districts would tell you that they're not able to do the things that they're doing with their full-service community schools absent the grants that they got for those programs, that the other money that there is used in other purposes, designated purposes in those districts. Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you. Just a quick question for maybe Mr. Strom. I was just reading the underlying statute because I, too, wasn't on the committee when they put this together. But is it my understanding that each school, the grant is only up to $150,000.
Mr. Strom.
Chair, Representative Joachim, that's correct. Yes, the state grants were limited to those amounts, and we've got a list for those if folks on the committee would like to see the amounts that each school site got.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick closing comment, then. I just wanted to thank Dear Reverend Duluth and Brooklyn Center for being here today. The amount of work you're able to do by leveraging only $150,000, because the coordination this takes is absolutely incredible, to pull in that private-public partnership, the dollars, and to take care of the kids and the families in the school. So I wish it wasn't just $150,000. And while Representative Chair Dabney was gone, Representative Erickson brought up a good point, trying to protect your budget and wondering if this should be from Health and Human Services. But the work you're doing with the $150,000 is specifically within the school coordinating, and I think that does belong in our budget. So thank you.
Thank you. Up next, we have Matt Ruzick and Julie Ruzick, and I'll just introduce you as the Rochester team. Oh, and Christina Wright Peterson, my apologies. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Ruzek, principal at Riverside Central Elementary School in Rochester, Minnesota.
Good morning, committee and Madam Chair. My name is Julie Ruzek. I am the Family and Community Engagement Coordinator for Rochester Public Schools.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Christina Hesby. I'm the RN program coordinator from Mayo Clinic, supporting our school health work.
Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm the principal of Riverside Central Elementary School in Rochester. We're centrally located, hence the name. We're 75 to 80% free and reduced lunch population. We have a newcomer center that's housed within our building as well. Anywhere between 50 to 80 different languages spoken in the course of a given day, which is an absolute gift to all of us as a staff and students. In that, though, poses a number of challenges. And so with community schools, we've been able in the last 3 years to focus on three targeted areas of attendance, academic achievement, and climate and culture. The question's been asked in regards to an impact in culture or behavioral data in our school. We've seen a significant decrease in what would be deemed traditional behavioral data. And with that, I think, is the focus on partnership. And we've started now through the funds in this grant and the efforts of our community partners. We've seen a contribution through the Department of Natural Resources as a partner, Mayo Clinic, who sits at the table with us today, Boys and Girls Club, United Way, University of Minnesota Rochester, PACE, which is an organization focused specifically for families of color in our schools, Fernbrook Mental Health, Olmsted County Public Health. We have a dental clinic. All of these are brought to us and partnered with us through the community school efforts. For us, as we target and look at the data and the results in regards to our students, we look at it at a much longer trajectory than we would have previously, and that's why we need this continued focus and effort in regards to support from things like the bill that we're discussing this afternoon. We're looking at a 12 to 15 year trajectory. We're asking to stay focused on our students through graduation. The students that we serve traditionally have not graduated, and we're starting to see an increase in attendance and a decrease in regards to behavioral, and we know that we're starting to see an increase in engagement, and we have hard and fast data with regards to that as well. We see a significant impact in our students that are more frequently attending school in their academic achievement, directly linked. The more motivated they are to be at our school, the more likely they are to succeed. Riverside functions not just as a community school. We are a family. So I know aunts and uncles, grandmas and grandpas, and now the beauty of it is it's not just the school that's serving those needs. We have folks from Olmsted County who are working as mental health practitioners, and they're serving family needs as well. That's a county cooperation with us that we've never seen before. So has it spread through our community 100%? Affectionately, I say it's like a fungus. It's just started to grow. And what we find now is, and then I'll let the let rest of the folks here at the table speak much more eloquently than I am, is that when we leave our outside of our school, and that's really what this effort is to eliminate the walls and windows and to make our community our school. So when we go out into our community, there are participants with my school that would not traditionally be participants within my school. Now not only are they participants, they're advocates. So we have a partnership with a program called Arts for the Trail, And we have members of our public library, Mayo Clinic, asking if Riverside Central is a private school, and what do we do to get our students there? That's not been something that's previously happened in regards to our school. Our students are proud of it, our families are proud of it, and they should be because of this bill. So I appreciate everyone here, and I appreciate your support.
Ms. Brusick, or Ms. Peterson, whoever would like to go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. We are just so happy to be here today to talk to you about the good work that's going on in Rochester Public Schools. My job today is to talk to you briefly about strategy, and that is the infographic that you should have in front of you. My apologies if you don't, if we don't have enough. We will make sure that those are sent out to you. But before I, well, actually, if you take a look at that infographic, please look at the center, because our job in Rochester Public Schools is to assure that all of our students, every single one, is academically successful within our school system. And in doing that, we have to push on our system. We have found that we can't do school the same way that we've done it in the past, and we can't do school the same way that we do at every single other school. Our school has to be responsive to the needs of the students, and that's what we're doing through our implementation of the full-service community schools model. You will see a variety of partners that surround our three indicators that we are measuring. These are partners that we work with on a daily, almost sometimes minute-to-minute basis. And I look directly at my partner here because it is a tight relationship that we have formed with our partners. And what I have to say is when we push on this system of traditional education and form new relationships and trust, it takes time, but it is well worth it. To bring in partners outside of the school district and co-locate them within our buildings, it is more efficient, it is cost-effective, and it is what is best for students. We also recognize that our kids come to school like a baseball game. Some are already on third base, and some don't even have a mitt. And the community schools model supports every single kid. The kid who has already run the bases a million times and needs more of a push, needs more opportunity, and we get the mitt for the kid that wants to play. And so we ask that you look at this strategy today as a strategy for all students to meet the needs of all of our students, and look at the way that we are pushing on a traditional system to do more and better things for our students. I'd go on and on about this, but there's been a lot of talk today. So please recognize that at the heart of all of this is academic success for all of our students, and that we are all working together collaboratively to make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Peterson.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for having me. Over the past 2 years, Mayo Clinic's relationship with our local school district has strengthened thanks to the outreach of our community schools program. We value this relationship due to the centuries-old research that has proven that education and health outcomes can be dependent on each other. Children who are healthy are more prepared to learn, and those that are successful with their education tend to be healthier. Children served by the community schools face barriers to accessing health care for various reasons. We recently asked a high school student where he went for primary care, as he was at risk for not starting the school year due to his out-of-date immunizations. He said he couldn't remember the doctor's name because he saw someone different each time, but he knew there was a bright red sign that hung above the door. He was not describing our primary care department, he was describing our emergency room. This winter, we worked with the mother of a second grader whose daughter had missed more than 15 days of school before winter break had even started. This mother had kept her daughter home due to upper respiratory infections and symptoms that she thought were just normal for a student or a child with asthma. During a short visit with a provider in the school, it was discovered that the child's inhaler was actually empty, and thus she had not been getting any medication. These students served by the community schools are children that will grow and stay in our communities. They are not as likely to attend out-of-state colleges and only return home for the holidays. They will stay here in Minnesota to live and work. They'll become members of our community and hopefully members of our workforce. If we do not invest in them at the age of 7 or even 17, for all of us, the total investment will be much greater when they are 70. We are all good at what we do, whether it's providing health care or educating our children.
but working separately can only get us so far. The community schools provides us the opportunity to come out of our silos and have a collective impact, which is measurable and gives us meaningful outcomes. This is why we are here today and asking for support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can wait till the end, Madam Chair, if you'd like to. It's kind of a more finalized.
Go ahead. Go quickly, though.
Okay.
If you can keep it brief.
I can try to keep it brief.
Thank you.
So I just want to add something before we end here that I want to thank Representative Murphy for bringing this bill forward. I love when we think outside the box and we try different things. But I just want to say I have two qualifiers or two hesitancies when I look at this. One being I do believe we need to take an extensive look at the data of our current full-service schools and make sure that that trajectory of, academic achievement and graduation rates and so on is going up significantly, because I do believe before putting more money into something like this, we need to make sure it's working, and data would tell that. The second thing is I'm really hesitant to start a new program of continued funding that we would put into our budget without maybe reducing some other portion. And my reason being is we have, as a state, current commitments that we are not meeting, the special ed cross-subsidy, the ELL, and to go on. And to start a new program to put on top of all these concerns me greatly. I do support the idea. I just, those are my qualifiers and kind of my struggles that I'm looking at. So I do hope that we would really study this and make sure it's working before we put ongoing funding in and make sure we're meeting our current commitments as a state.
Okay. Representative Devney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief. To the testifiers from the Rochester Public Schools, you've got this really cool, colorful thing. I think those are orangish, reddish polygons, but I'm a little fuzzy on that right now. Hexagons. Okay, hexagons. See, hang around the Education Committee. You'll get corrected. You've got curriculum, culture, and climate in attendance. Can you just speak briefly to how you are measuring each of those in the schools, please?
Yes, thank you, Representative Dabney.
Ms. Music, go ahead.
Thank you. The exciting piece is that this strategy is something that we are using at all three of our sites, but it is responsive to the needs of each individual building. So maybe Mr. Ruzek can speak to that a little bit more, but each building identifies through a data process every August and using a team approach to identify the data that they want to research and put supports toward at the beginning of the school year. So we identified as a small community schools continuum to look at these three areas and look at them extensively and long-term, as you mentioned before, Representative, looking to watch that impact over time. Instead of starting a school year by having a new goal each school year, we're looking at these three things over time, over a period of years, so that we can prove longevity and results in that.
Yeah.
Mr. Rusick.
Thank you. Pause. I'm learning.
That's good. It's okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. As far as Riverside, the collection of data and the collection of information that's demonstrating growth, we've utilized our partners to do that. We have four committees that reside at my school, all focused through the pillars of community schools, one of them being a real hyper focus on attendance. United Way sits on that with us, and we're able to utilize some of their resources in regards to data collection, and they've identified different strands of information. What I would say in regards to public schools are that we have watched and observed data for a long time, but it's always been the same people looking at it. With community schools, we have community partners like Mayo Clinic that was able to bring to our attention, maybe asthma has an impact on your attendance. Well, we looked at a cross-segment of our population that attend my school in one specific trailer home and identified a significant number of cases of asthma. Untreated asthma it causes a problem to learn. Untreated dental pain causes a significant issue in regards to learning. And so we missed that. We missed that for however many years we functioned as a school system. Now, because we sit in these committees and we look at these pieces of data, we're able to watch that growth as it goes over the course of time. My caution would be is to say that we're not seeing growth in all three to start, because we're starting to see growth in areas that we know have a direct correlation and impact with the next. So it's building on top of each other. To deviate from it would to eliminate the growth that we're starting to see.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mrs. Wright Peterson, I am from healthcare, and I got to tell you, thank you.
I've got someone else in the room then.
I hope there is, because this is a message that has to go clear. The systems have to get involved, and here again, Mayo's leading the charge. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Members, we have just a very limited time right now for public testimony. If there's anybody from the public who would like to come down and testify, now is the time. Mr. Heller. Mr. Heller, we're going to have to make this very quick.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Heller, and I officially represent the 26 Exceptional People with Disabilities. Specific question, yield to a question to the chair regarding these practices that are being used, or federal grant dollars, I believe. The neighborhood programming started a couple years ago. It's my understanding they don't have to work on compliance for accessibility, 508, and web content. I don't know if that's correct or not, but it's my understanding that anyone that touches federal dollars have to apply 508. I wonder if, through the chair, if these parties be willing to express how 508 and web content accessibility guidelines fits in their infographics, and as well as how do they integrate with the schools, each school's SMART goals for improvements that they're going to integrate. I didn't hear anything about SMART goals or the MTTS, whatever that means, but I think it's a relevant piece as we look ahead and also if they have anybody that's print disabled and twice exceptional as they integrate for civic engagement between the public and the school. So that's really through the chair if they want to ask those specific questions. I'm not here to be isolated or get therapy. I'm here to make this aware of the importance of civic engagement as relates to the legislature and their constituents. I appreciate this time to speak on the situation.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. I am just going to ask if you have a brief response, that's fine. If you'd like to follow up with the committee in writing and a written response, that would be appropriate as well. And Mr. Heller, I just want to give you my word that we continue to look at this and we will continue to work on this to meet your request to make sure that these documents are accessible to you. Any other members? Mr. Heller.
I pardon you, Chair. Again, unless it's sent to the members and they're interested enough to know, it should be sent to the members, and if they'd be willing to copy me on it. But I didn't hear a yes or no from them, and frankly, unless we get a yes or no, it really has no relevance for me to talk on this. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to testify? Is there any other questions from the committee? Okay. Representative Murphy, any closing comments?
Thank you for your attention, and thank you for your consideration. And I renew my motion.
Okay, so hearing no other comments or testimony, House File 1013 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Ed Finance Omnibus Bill. Members, inadvertently, when we moved our minutes, I forgot to ask if there was any objection to what was printed or corrections. So I have to take that up again. Any objections or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, now they will be moved, and we stand adjourned.